Are you ready for this? As hell! What we're gonna try and get in this show? Magnets, the Rawnsley Roundup, Billy Baseball, South African player you've never heard of the month. Is the IPL turning into Neighbours? Wasn't that supposed to be on last week? Carberry Corner and 50 over cricket. It's a wonderful format.
Number one, an update.
Update.
Yes.
Our long-running campaign.
Here we go. Let's get this bad boy down. So when last we left Carberry Corner, Carberry had been called into the England Lions squad. Now let's see what's happened since then. What's been going on, people have been saying. I want some more Carberry stats.
Back up our faith with statistics, Carberry.
Oh, here we go. In that game, he scored a 32, then won the game. With Joe Root, the England Lions beat West Indies. Root scoring an unbeaten century. Carberry chipping in with 72, not out. He then scored an unbeaten 61 against Yorkshire. Then into the Pro 40, he scored a 76, a wonderful, quick unbeaten century against Somerset. And then a 50 against Notts. And in between that, he's played Glamorgan and he didn't do that well.
Well done, Carberry Corner, people!
Well done, Carberry Corner. Let's not end on a bad note. Carberry's back.
My turn to chat, Ross. South African player you've never heard of the month.
I've been looking forward to this.
Slight adaptation on the old favourite. And the purpose of this section is really to introduce the listener to some of the players that are going to be in the South African touring side later this summer that they may not have heard of, or if they have heard of them, don't know much about. And we're going to begin with Imran Tahir.
Okay, spinner. He's a spinner, right?
He is a leg spinner, Ross. Yes, you're absolutely correct. And he is 33 years old, born in Pakistan, played for Pakistan at both under 19 and Pakistan A level, but qualified for South Africa through residency, having married a South African wife. Imran Tahir, test average in bowling, 7 games, only 37.
Not great. Not an auspicious start.
Not good. Economy at 3.25. He's had no 5-wicket hauls at all. Maybe an explanation, though, here, Ross. Many of his tests, indeed the last three, have been in New Zealand, which are not good conditions
not
for a leg spinner.
Haven, no.
And he's also been in a lot of games which have finished in 2 to 3 days. Put simply, the South Africans have been destroying their opponents.
I see.
If you're thinking, this is boding very well, and let's be honest, Michael Vaughan on Twitter thought exactly that thought when he said Graham Swan is the difference between the England and South African bowling attacks, implying somehow that Tahir was basically far less good than Swan. Let's have a look at his ODI average, 10.71.
Oh, that's formidable.
This guy knows how to bowl.
What's
major
that?
Incident in the history of Imran Tahir that all of the listeners will need to be aware of. Indeed. Called up for South Africa for the first time in January 2010, and they realised just before the game he wasn't eligible.
Oh.
Not until December that year. An embarrassing climb down by the South African authorities. Much embarrassment. But he's eventually joined the team and he's become part of that four-man bowling attack with Steyn, Morkel and Vernon Philander. He has gone, interestingly, in the last couple of weeks, back to his homeland of Pakistan to train with the great Pakistani leg spinner Abdul Qadir of the 70s and 80s.
That's interesting.
Qadir says he loves to hear, loves the fact that he still wants to learn, wishes he was still in the Pakistani setup. And Qadir is saying that he can impart a few tips for Tahir, particularly about variations. I hear overtones of the mystery ball, as claimed by other spinners, such as Saklay Mushtaq.
It's a dark art, isn't it, spinning?
But he's gone to do that. If any of you think, well, okay, maybe he's still the weak link, he topped the Hampshire 2011 bowling averages, an average of 24.46, taking 28 wickets in 8 matches. Expect him to do well in English conditions.
I like the look of him. And one word, or two, Paul Harris. What do you think of Paul Harris?
Yeah, two words.
This is what I think of Paul Harris. I thought he was rubbish. But to be fair to the guy, he took quite a lot of wickets in his career. But I think Tahir seems like someone who's got a bit more about him.
I've really been concerned that England are going to lose to South Africa this winter. And I've finally come across a statistic that's going to allow me to sleep at night.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's this. The South African number eight is Dale Steyn. He averages with the bat 15.
Ooh.
And then at number nine, you get Morkel, 15, Philander at 10, 15, and Tahir at 11, 10. They do not have the depth of batting that England have got. And I'm not entirely sure. I don't disagree with Vaughan. I think Graham Swan might be the superior spinner.
Oh, well, I'm certainly looking forward to that. They've certainly got a great attack. And Philander, he can bat a little bit. He's had a couple of good innings at Somerset. But we, I think, have a very strong lower order. It stood us in very good stead before, and it needs to keep wagging that tail because it's certainly done us proud in the past.
Absolutely. So that's the new feature, South African player you've never heard of the month. It's something we're going to try and develop over the next few episodes so you're completely ready to go when the South Africans are ready to go later this summer.
Ronsley Roundup.
It's nice. Nice little jingle.
Thanks very much. I've gone for that instant replay. It goes like that. Okay. Ronsley's back.
What's he been up to?
Oh, now, in a fantastic week. He's gone for the timeline on Facebook. Now, that's happened to me as well on my Facebook. I don't really use Facebook very much, just for stalking former Worcester left-arm spin bowler Matthew Ronsley. But I can't really... I can't really use my timeline. And his has gone kind of a bit funny. A lot of pictures of children. I've tried not to look at those, because I think that's a bridge too far. Now, what someone has put... there's a lovely exchange. As he moved on, because Ronsley's been all over the world. He's been to Tunisia since we've...
Tunisia. Now Tunisia.
Yeah, he's been all over the place. Sharing wonderful stories. He's been in Tel Aviv.
Interesting.
What's he up to? But he's had some wonderful adventures, I think. But where is he? Now, Jonathan Herdman, his friend, was on. And he said... Matt, you've been all over the place. Are you in the KGB these days? Jonathan's on the
we're
same.
We're all thinking
that's
it.
What we're all thinking. He's only saying it. And Ronsley says, only in the week, MI6 at weekends.
Is a wit.
That's the other thing we were thinking. And then Jonathan Herdman says, well, better than bowling 17 overs of left-arm floaters.
Which is right there, right where it hurts.
Right in the kisser.
Right in the solar plexus.
In his bowling ability. Oh. When he says left-arm floaters... He did actually bowl quite slowly. He's not a reference to his bowling being poo in some way. There's no pun, I don't think, there. But it's love, and I will not have it said
because you bowl right arm floaters, don't you?
They're not supposed to float, but they sometimes do. Ronsley is an excellent bowler. I don't know what you're talking about, Herdman, but if it's banter, I can put up with that. But if you're seriously dissing his talent, then you're going to find yourself sorely wrong.
Has he been to the Kremlin?
He's been to the Kremlin. He's
signed in at the Kremlin and Tel Aviv and Tunisia.
This is absolutely
brilliant.
What's he
doing?
Oh, he's been all over the place. The fact is, he's been all over the place.
But yet,
he can't in Tunisia, no less. I think, and you know what? He's obviously playing for the future, Ronsley. He made the comment, looking for personal recommendations from friends for builders in the Worcester area. Testimonials or names, please.
Right.
So this, we've gone into the thorny area of builders in the Worcestershire area. Now, this is a quick section for anyone who's interested in good builders in that area. Bill Corshaw said, hi, Matt, there's a builder down your way called Willie Turnup. I've heard he's pretty good.
Fantastic.
I like this. That's very good. Ronsley said, very good. I hear he was bought out by Bodgett and Hope.
The repartee.
Bit of banter. I love it. Ben Homer, I don't think that's a pun, I think it's his name. My dad, been in the building trade for over 40 years, and you know him. I don't think that's a joke. I think he's actually got a dad that's a builder.
No, good on him.
Yeah.
Good on him.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And then someone says, isn't Limey a builder? I don't know why that should sound like that, but I think the next ones I'll do as a conversation. Clementine Serrell says, isn't Limey a builder? I'll message him if you need his number. Then Joanne Leverett says, oh, Matt, I've got that business card for you, my cousin, and my builder. He's very particular and honest. You won't be disappointed, smiley face. I'll inbox you his number. And then Dan Mallin goes, Conrad Davies, mate, based Bromgrove, done all my extensions, top bloke.
Top stuff from Rawlsley.
So that's just a little bit of... and then, we've got just a couple more things for Rawlsley. He's back in Fernal Heath.
Where's Fernal Heath?
It's in Worcestershire.
Okay, he's back.
In between Droitwich and Worcestershire, he's back. And James Darge says, actually, Rawlsley's update was very happy with my meat delivery. Thank you, Dargie. Now, delivery, I don't think he's making a cricket pun. I think it's literally just he's had a delivery of meat. I don't think he's saying like a cricket delivery. I think he's just saying, I've had some meat in.
It doesn't mean a cock in the bum.
No, it doesn't mean
a meat
that.
Delivery.
It doesn't even mean that. Not even that. I wasn't even going to go there. James Dodd says, Mr. Rawlsley's having a barbecue this evening, I think. Have a great weekend.
I bet he does.
So he's at Rawlsley. The happy ending is, well, not the end. This is just the veritable middle or near the start of the Rawlsley story. But Rawlsley's back home with his two kids and a little message just says, back with Team Rawlsley. What will happen for Rawlsley next week? Is he back off the road? Has Daddy come home? Or is Rawlsley off again to cause, as the international man of mystery that we know him to be? We love you, Rawls.
You know me, Ross. I've got a curious mind.
You certainly have.
And what I've been curious about in the last week, and indeed slightly longer, is what on earth James Anderson and Stuart Broad are wearing on their wrist. And I've done a bit of investigating, which we don't do much of on this pod blast.
Yeah.
We tend to just speculate rather than investigate. And this section is therefore about magnets.
Oh.
Magnet therapy.
Oh.
And what I'm talking about in particular is the Trion Z Active Magnetic Sports Bracelet.
And available that's what they're wearing, is it?
For about £30 from all of your major cricket retailers. And what I want to look at is what it is, who's using it, and why. With this one caveat. Simon Singh, scientist, said a couple of things about a product a while ago, had the shit sued out of him for libel. So much so that it was a disaster and it went to Parliament and then there's now a campaign for libel reform. So this is a message directly to the manufacturers of Trion Z Active Magnetic Sports Bracelet.
We like it.
Nothing I'm about to say is anything other than speculation.
We just speculate.
Or bits I'm quoting from Wikipedia.
And to be honest, I really like the Trion Z already, I've decided.
I've always liked it.
Yeah, everything Alex is about to say is I completely distance myself from. Go on.
The Trion Z harnesses the power of negative ions and twin 1000 GUAS therapeutic magnets. It is fitted with a capsule of negative ion-producing minerals which release negative ions at a rate of 50 to 100 times greater than other bracelets.
Oh.
And that's what they're wearing on their wrists. Question, why? This is the James Anderson interview. How did you hear about the Trion Z and how long have you been wearing their products? James Anderson replied. I don't know whether you can do a Lancastrian accent.
Can I do the voice of a mad scientist?
Yes, you can.
So, how did you hear about Trion Z and how long have you been wearing the products?
I've worn Trion Z for the last 4 years, which has coincided with a great period in my career. I can't actually remember how I was first introduced to the products. I'm just pleased it happened.
What do you feel are the main benefits of wearing the Trion Z?
Since wearing Trion Z products, I haven't been injured much, which is a huge part of my success. So there you go. James Anderson saying that he hasn't been injured because he's been wearing these magnets on his wrists. So question then, how does it work? Well, in fact, I've turned to the website of Magnetic Z to try and find out exactly how it does work. And they have the following compelling scientific explanation, which I couldn't possibly comment on because I have absolutely no scientific qualifications whatsoever. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Magnet therapy or magnetic therapy is commonly used therapy involving the use of magnets. No surprise there.
Yeah, yeah.
To treat a wide range of health conditions.
Yeah.
It's a totally natural therapy and is frequently used to relieve pain, improve sleeping patterns and boost energy levels.
Yeah.
The first recordings of magnets being used for treating health issues date back thousands of years. Yet today, magnet therapy still struggles to be officially recognised. But does magnet therapy work? Well, the theory behind magnetic therapy is that when a magnet is placed around a specific joint or body part, more blood is attracted to that area, leading to an increase in oxygen and nutrients, and that leads to a faster healing process. Some of the players who are using it at the moment, Rory McIlroy in golf, Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Nathan Robertson of badminton, triathlete Michele Jones, Brittany Linicombe of golf, and Nick Matthews, who's big in squash, I hear.
In the squash arena.
So that's magnet therapy. I went on to a scientific resource I like to use a lot when I want the final word in a scientific issue, and I don't know whether you have this problem, Ross. And I just want somebody to just close it. I go to Wikipedia.
Interesting.
And Wikipedia, not myself, for the lawyers out there, not me, seems to think it's a matter of old hogwash, which has never been proved to work in any matter whatsoever. And specifically, I'm referring to Robert Park's 2000 article, Voodoo Science, The Road from Foolishness to Fraud. Not only are magnetic fields of no value in healing, you might characterise these as homeopathic magnetic fields. So, are they just dummies? What's going on here with these sportsmen using these things, Ross?
Well, look, the only recorded evidence I know about magnets being used for therapeutic purposes is Tony Stark, otherwise known as Iron Man, who uses one near his heart to push away shrapnel so it doesn't go into his bloodstream and kills him.
Thank you for that contribution. I don't think we could finish this section without turning to one of our favourite cricket clubs up north, Tadcaster Magnet Cricket
Club. Do they use the magnet?
They don't. We should ask them. Went on Tadcaster Magnet's website and they had the following to say. Tadcaster Magnet was formed in 1999, as we all know, yeah, by the amalgamation of the town's two previous clubs, Tadcaster Cricket Club and Magnet Cricket Club.
Is that a place, Magnet?
Yes, it is. It's up near Harrogate. Mm-hmm. Tadcaster Cricket Club has been in existence for over 100 years, winning the York and District Senior League Championship 8 times between 1933 and 1967. Magnet Cricket Club has also been in the top flight since the 60s, but there's been a steady decline in standards and player numbers. The purpose of the amalgamation was to arrest a declining standard of cricket in the town by focusing local resources on one club instead of two. And after several seasons, I'm pleased to say the amalgamation has proved to be very successful. And Tadcaster Magnet Cricket Club is on course to be the leading club in the area.
So, that's terrific.
Little section there. If any of you are out there, our listeners, and using this product, the magnetic products, we'd be delighted to hear how they've helped you. I'm in such a desperate situation with my batting, which at the moment is an average of zero, that I'm seriously considering buying this product.
For the magnet.
I'd love to hear from our listeners. If you want to get in contact, just email thecricketpodblast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter @cricketpodblast.
Anything to do with your ions, anything like that. I'm just disappointed that Magnet didn't decide to merge with a local club at Fridge. Now, it occurred to me recently that a few people have been saying the IPL is not what it used to be. It was this exciting format, and now it's just on in the background, really. And I thought, how true that is. It came like a bolt from the blue. I used to stay in. I used to go, God, the IPL's on. People would call and say, do you want to come out for a drink? And I'd go, the IPL's on. I might just stick in here on my own. Now things have changed. The IPL really does exist in the background. Mostly about 5 o'clock, watched mostly by the unemployed, perhaps students and people pulling sickies. It's a limited format and it's only got so many storylines. Yeah, it's very much like Neighbours. Has the IPL turned into Neighbours? There's only a few storylines, as I say. Has Ganguly still got it? I feel like I've seen that one 2 or 3 times. Chris Gayle can really hit it far. I've seen that episode about 8 or 9 times. And AB de Villiers saves the day. I've seen that 10 or 12 times, I think. Now, it's also full of Australians trying to be wacky and saying mad stuff. And I start to think about how many of the characters just return every year. There's very few new characters. Of course, Noreen was one that livened it up for a while. But pretty much, we've had the same characters again and again, going through the same tired old storylines. Jacques Callis, perhaps, as a kind of Paul Robinson figure. Stern, a little evil. We're not sure what he's up to. Sachin Tendulkar is the lovable Harold Bishop. Doesn't matter what he does, it's generally quite lovable and funny. Jesse Ryder, the big Jesse Ryder, as Lou, and Brendan McCullum as Toady. Yeah, these are just a few of the comparisons I've drawn between IPL and Neighbours. Also, Brett Lee as Carl Kennedy. I know that's a bit out there, but Brett Lee does also dabble in music. Have you ever heard?
I have. I've seen his wonderful Indian music video.
Oh, check it out. You can find Brett Lee music. Go onto YouTube and just type in Brett Lee music and you'll find that. Also, Carl Kennedy was in a band called Doctor and the Medics in the TV show. He also tours universities with that band, Carl Kennedy. Real name, Alan Fletcher. So, you know, I've had a big think about this. And if anyone agrees that the IPL has turned into Neighbours, on in the background, 5 o'clock, it's often, you know, some days if people are really sad, they even watch it twice. It is Neighbours. And I wonder when they're going to drop it and just join, the two casts can join, and there'll be some sort of, you know, like when Happy Days and Mork and Mindy came together. I think they should do that.
Question for you, Ross. If the IPL is Neighbours, what is Emmerdale?
Emmerdale is Australia's The Big Hit.
The Big Bash.
The Big Bash.
We're going to think about that for a week, but we'll come back.
Because there was, it was quite, not much happened, and then there was one big explosion in Emmerdale. And that's the same as Luke Wright's innings last year.
Hi, welcome to the segment of the Podblast where we talk about Billy Baseball, our cousin from over the waters. We're honoured today to have in the studio with us Tony Gonzalez, otherwise known as G-Money, and he's going to help us out with the concept of switch hitting, which we touched upon in our very first episode in relation to Kevin Peterson. Now, we may have misled you in the past as to what's going on in baseball with switch hitting, and Tony Gonzalez is here to set the record straight. Tony, let me just start with a simple question. What is switch hitting?
Switch hitting is a hitter that bats right-handed against left-handed pitching and bats left-handed against right-handed pitching.
So that kind of hitter can hit off his left and his right then?
Yes, depending on the pitcher.
And why would he choose to bat left or right-handed?
Because, now I'm no expert on cricket, but unlike cricket where the pitch is thrown directly overhand and bounced, a baseball pitcher comes anywhere from, say, 2 o'clock to, which would be what is called 3/4, or even 3 o'clock, which is sidearm, or even 4 o'clock, which is considered a sidewinder. And that makes the ball, a right-handed pitcher throwing to a right-handed hitter, that makes the ball kind of appear like it's coming from behind his head. Whereas a right-handed hitter against a left-handed pitcher has a clear view of the ball coming in all the way.
Switch hitters then. Who's a famous switch hitter?
Well, probably the most famous switch hitter in the history of baseball is Mickey Mantle, who played in the late 50s through the 60s. And he was a prodigious home run hitter from both sides of the plate.
So this is a guy who can bat right-handed, can bat left-handed, and he can still hit home runs.
Correct.
Consistently?
Pretty consistently, I think something like over 500 home runs in his career.
So if we summoned up the ghost of Mickey Mantle and we asked him, hand on heart, are you stronger on your right hand or your left hand, do you think he'd have an answer, or was he ambidextrous?
He would have a preference, and if we took a minute, we could look that up to see which side he hit more home runs from. Although it would probably be more home runs from the left side, because there, I would say there's 75 to 80% of the pitchers are right-handed. Therefore, the switch hitter is batting from the left side 75 to 80% of the time.
So what's the advantage of switching over? Why would a batter decide to do that?
I'll explain this again for you, Alex.
I didn't get it the first time.
Because the pitcher is throwing from a drop-down angle, not straight overhand, the ball to a left-handed hitter. Let's use left-handed as an example. A left-handed hitter facing a left-handed pitcher, the ball can give the appearance of coming from behind him. It can actually look like it's coming out at him and then break across the plate.
So if I...
Whereas a right-handed hitter facing the same pitch, that pitch would break right into his wheelhouse and, in fact, offer no danger to him.
So if I'm naturally right-handed facing that left-handed pitcher, I'm better off batting basically in my weaker hand but seeing what's happening rather than it coming across me.
Well, when you're dealing with a weaker hand, you're dealing with basically an opinion, because to make the major leagues as a switch hitter, you've developed to be quite proficient from both hands. Once you're in the major leagues, probably you will have better averages, more power from one side or the other. But that doesn't make it your weaker hand against the other hand in the major leagues. I don't know if that makes sense to you. But
That makes perfect sense. Tony, thank you for spending the time with us. We're going to be very keen to have you in future to explain some of the other mysteries of Billy Baseball, including why all cricketers throw like girls and why American baseball players know how to throw like real men. Thanks, Tony.
It's a pleasure. Have me back sometime.
What a knowledgeable guy Tony Gonzalez is.
I love Tony Gonzalez. What a guy. Let's have him back.
We will.
So what I really want to talk about was there a tweet that came through our Twitter not long ago. I thought I'd address. And I think yourself, Alex, had retweeted. KP knows it and Graham Swan knows it. This is the death of 50 over cricket. Is Peterson spelling the death of 50 over cricket by retirement?
I don't like 50 over cricket. I think they should just have test match cricket in 2020. I know you disagree with me. The best defence of 50 over cricket I heard from a colleague of mine during this week when he said to me, what I love about 50 over cricket is that it's like a piece of classical music. There are two or three movements and that a team can be down and get back up and then be knocked back down and get back up. And in 2020 cricket, one of three things is going to happen. Either one side is going to blast off and the other one's going to capitulate, or vice versa, or it's going to be a tight game.
Well, that's exactly what I mean. A test match is like Lawrence of Arabia. It's like this great epic. It's a sweeping, it often involves the British imperialism. And it's this wonderful little thing with all sorts of different movements. It's like a whole meal. 2020 is fast food, and somewhere there's this wonderful, beautifully paced little thing in the middle. And I wanted to imagine a world where it wouldn't have existed, where all these childhood memories I have of fantastic 50 over cricket. I thought about 50 over cricket looking at itself in a river, wondering whether to jump down. Much like Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, and wondering what life would have been like without 50 over cricket. Without 50 over cricket, indeed, we wouldn't have had the great run chases, the beautifully timed finishers like Michael Bevan, the semi-final between South Africa and Australia, the great You've Just Dropped the World Cup, Mate, with Herschel Gibbs. I'm sure. Well, he'd deny anything, that guy. The 5-6s that Dimitri Mascarenhas scored, and then 6-6s that came off Stuart Broad just a couple of months later.
Say the run chase for 4-3-8 in that South African run chase against the Australians.
The birth of the Hollyoaks, Owen Morgan coming into the side. We never would have had these fantastic skills. So many players, like Paul Collingwood came through, perhaps England's sexiest cricketer. And the thing that worries me most, the man that would never, I believe, have found a way into the test team without the approval of 50 over cricket and without his success in that 50 over cricket game, Kevin Peterson. The man, like Oedipus, is looking to slay the father that gave birth to him. He has ODI cricket to thank for his career, and yet, like Oedipus, he is blind to this fact. And ODI cricket will live long, long after the end of Kevin Peterson.
Get on Twitter, and we'll catch you next time.
Next time, maybe the thorny issue of cricket poetry. Join us again.